They're going to know this individual. Callie Muslin, how you been?
Hi, good. Hello, everyone on the News and Views Radio Network. It's so good to have you here, Joel.
Now that you're this big executive and editor of North Dakota Living. And
you better not talk me up this much because my boss is also on with us, so I don't want him to think that, her head's getting a little too big over here.
You did do doggone well, and I love the publication, Cal. I really do.
Thank you. Yep, North Dakota Living. Visit ndliving.com for subscription information, folks.
There you go.
Thanks for the plug.
I have one.
Okay, I know.
I have a subscription, and I love getting it. Josh Kramer joins us. He's executive director or executive vice president and general manager of the North Dakota Association of Rural Electric Cooperatives. In other words, he's the boss, as Callie just said. And Josh, we're here for a celebration today. Good to have you on News and Views.
You bet. Welcome to Mandan. Thanks for coming out.
Yeah. Tell people what this celebration is.
So today we're celebrating 50 years of our partnership with Bismarck State College in the line worker training program. This program started in 1970. We've been leasing property to BSC for since that time. We collaborated then, and we're collaborating now. And we have an exciting announcement we're going to make today about a reinvestment into the line worker training program for the region. We are going to be building a new facility. It's going to be really state-of-the-art, two classrooms, a space to hold a CDL simulator, which is a requirement for the line worker trade, and also an indoor training arena, dirt floors. Our line workers are going to be able to set poles, climb poles, do a lot of the same things that they do outside. And it's funny, Joel, you know, some of the longer-term managers of the utilities are like, well, we need these guys to know how to work outside, right? You know, it's going to be cold, and, you know, the instructors at the program, they reassure me these guys are still going to be working and training outside, and they're going to get the full flavor. But it's one thing to have to do the work outside, but to teach and to train, it's going to really be nice to be doing some of this indoors, you know, during those long North Dakota winters.
Well, the other part is you can work them every day this way. I mean, there's days in the North Dakota winter you can want them to be tough outside, but they just can't go outside. This way, you get everything you want out of them.
You bet. And it's good for us, too, because, you know, we are, as the association, we're the trade association for North Dakota's electric cooperatives, and we go out to our cooperatives and we do a number of different safety and training classes and courses with them, because everybody wants our, you know, line workers and our employees to come home safe at night. So this is going to allow us to bring in utility line workers and employees to do training during those non-construction years or seasons, months, and do things in the wintertime that we would typically be doing during the nice weather.
You know, 59 years on God's earth, and I can tell you this, I've known a lot of your line workers, okay? No one ever has called one of them soft. No one ever. These men and women, they know how to work. They really do. And I suppose part of this is just that, trying to find out and make sure they're safe while they work.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they're the ones that get the call when it's below, you know, zero, and there's the worst case weather scenario that you can imagine, and they're the ones that are going out, you know, and whether it's a holiday or a weekend, you know, they're the ones that respond. And such an important trade and such an important part of our public safety.
And these line workers also, if I can just add, they're also often the face of the co-op on the local level. You know, when you think of small town rural communities, you think of your local electric cooperative, like when I think of Chem Electric Cooperative, I know my local lineman by first name.
Oh, say his name. Come on.
Dylan Steinelson.
There you go.
Marty Messer. Yeah, so they're good guys.
Exactly. Right now they're going, really, Callie? But how many people have gone through the school?
I think it's 1,700 that have completed. Yeah, and since 1970, that's what they estimate. I mean, that have went through it. So
that's about a lot.
Yeah, the instructors are going to be on here in a little bit, but about 60 years what graduates through the program.
So when you talk about the line workers themselves, what type of qualifications to come to work for your co-ops, and what do they need to bring to the dance?
Well, I mean, one, the knowledge of the trade, right? You know, the basic skills. We offer an apprenticeship program, and the co-ops work with them to try to train them and get them to up to speed in the program. But, you know, that basic, you know, firsthand knowledge, but a lot of it comes with experience, too. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, working with somebody who knows what they're doing. This is dangerous work. And I think that's one of the things our cooperatives do really well is they, you know, they retain their employees. And, you know, a lot of the students that graduate out of the program, they don't always go directly to a co-op. They may go with a contracting company or, you know, travel around, you know, make some good wages.
Sure.
And then they, you know, look to settle down and they want to go to a co-op that has good benefits and settle down in a community. And, you know, a lot of folks who started a co-op, they end up staying.
What type of partner has BSC been?
Exceptional. I mean, we couldn't do it without them. You know, just them initiating this program, not just for the line worker training trade, but just our industry in general. BSC's on the cutting edge of, you know, what's new, what's the latest, new techniques, new things that our industry needs to train on and to understand, and they've just been an exceptional partner.
Callie, in our time working together, we really focused on trade and tech and that need. I mean, this is a perfect example of what we used to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I just think a lot of my friends, and for me, myself, I never considered a trade or a two-year school. And I think institutions like BSC are really doing a good job of getting into the schools and reaching the younger students and showing them that, you know, this tech education, this trade occupation, it's a good option for a career, and it's out there for both men and women.
See, and it is a good career. I mean, I know a lot of linemen that got nice fishing boats. Can I just say that? I mean, they're doing just fine. I mean, I've got some neighbors out at the lake that were just wonderful, wonderful neighbors. And I have to tell you, they've been very successful at life. They've been happy with their work, you know, number one, which it makes for a tough day if you get up in the morning and don't like working. I mean, it does. And but the other part is it's given them the type of life and lifestyle that they want, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's hard work. It's demanding work, but it's the work that at the end of the day you feel good about, right? You're going, you're getting somebody's power back on. You know, what could be more gratifying than that?
Well, and Joel, the BSC Lineworker Program, they have a 90% placement rate for their graduates with hourly earnings up to $40 an hour as soon as you graduate from this 10-month program
at BSC. As soon as you graduate.
Yep,
Oh, wait a second here. We got to talk about that. Okay, so there's a one Chandler Arford that never pays his debts to me when we bet on these Packer Viking games, and he's making that kind of money after going through your lineman school. He can pay his debts off. Can we just say that? I mean, come on.
I'm not going to throw Chandler under the bus here because I like that nephew of yours.
He's a pretty good guy. He really is. When we come back, here's what I'd like to do, Josh, because you have a better vision of this than, I mean, your fingerprints are there. You know what's going on, but I want to talk about the future of energy. I want to talk about where the energy industry is going and what it's going to look like in a couple of years. Josh, we were talking before the break about the commitment, the money that went into what you're going to be celebrating today. Talk to me about where the money came from, how much it is.
Yeah, you bet. So we're so thankful. We were able to get a grant from the United States Department of Commerce, EDA, the Economic Development Association, to fund $4 million of this. It's going to, you know, we're estimating it's going to be about a $5 million plus project. And then the match came from our members, our cooperatives, and our partners. So we've had, you know, folks like Great River Energy, Montreal Williams Electric Cooperative in Williston, Basin Electric, Central Power Electric, Lower Yellowstone, a Montana cooperative located in Sydney, contributed to this project.
A lot of people listening to you right now.
You bet. And even though it's, you know, the program is North Dakota, it really supports the whole region. Minn Kota Power and CoBank, CFC, Resco, which is a rural electric supply cooperative, Border States Electric, and then the Rural Development Finance Corporation, and our members, the 21 members of the North Dakota RECs, you know, put up a lot of the costs for the design, the architectural work, the plans, and, you know, we pursued this grant option, and I should say before we even, you know, got the grant, you know, our co-op members were committed to this project.
Yeah.
It all started before that because we knew we needed to do something. It was time, and, you know, this is the industry, you gotta support all the folks in the industry, and you know, I always kind of refer to the line workers as I'm a military guy, they're the infantry, they're the ground folks, they're the ones on the front lines, they're out there, you know, as Kelly alluded to, the face of the co-ops, and you know, I want to just encourage everybody, you know, when you're out, I know we've, you know, nobody likes when their power goes out, right? I think the majority of our cooperatives maintain about a 99% rate of keeping the power on. It's even better than that. But, you know, thank a utility worker, thank a co-op line worker, thank the person at the front desk helping you, the member service folks, because they're committed to their members, and you know, we're here to serve. And the profits that a cooperative makes, it either gets reinvested back into the plant, the poles, the wires, the business, the community, or goes back to the members in the form of capital credits.
Yeah, I can tell you this, you guys, my power did go off twice in the last year. Both times it wasn't the co-op's fault. Somebody hit one of the poles with a payloader. You know, and it happens, Josh. It does.
Great point. I'm glad you brought that up. As we're kind of getting out in the field, scratching around in the dirt, right? Everybody's getting into spring's work. You know, be cognizant of those overhead lines, those poles. You know, we have co-ops that they'll have up to 30 poles a year get hit by farm equipment. So safety is a priority.
Be there the next day. So you guys, I mean, you look at this in terms of the future. I know how both of you think. I mean, what's the energy going to look in industry going to look like in 5 years and in 10 years, Josh?
Yeah, you know, it's. I think similar, right? I mean, we're seeing a transition to, you know, there's more diversity in generation, and we talk a lot about generation. You know, what's that generation source of the future? Is it going to be coal? Is it going to be wind, solar, hydro? Truth is, we need it all, right? So we're hearing a lot about climate change, and I think our members are very cognizant of what can we do as cooperatives to help in that effort. But as we kind of transition there, we got to remember that, you know, as we electrify, you know, other industries, let's say transportation, we're talking a lot about electric vehicles, the need for power is only going to go up. And how do we provide that generation, that electricity that folks need, and do it as reliably as we can? We cannot forget the reliability piece of it. That's so important. As we're, you know, when we're building new generation, we got to have the transmission to bring it from point A to point B. And that's got to be part of the conversation.
If my parents, Kelly, saw, I mean, this was one of those, you left the light on, Doreen and Ray, you left the light on. You didn't need that light on. You know, if my parents saw now in my home what I run by electricity and how I take it for granted. I mean, think of how things have changed for my generation, and think of what's going to happen for your generation already. I mean, if you're sitting around in Robinson having a beer with some friends, do they really know where the power is coming from?
No, and I kind of had mentioned that just in the last hour, Joel, when we were local, but I think as we're getting further and further away from the generation that remembers the lights first went on in the barn, you know, when we first electrified rural North Dakota. And so, you know, I think my generation doesn't understand that generation or what all pieces have to connect. It's like a links in the chain, that the links all have to be strong. So at the end, you can flip your light on, you can charge your cell phone, you can listen to that KFGO or News and Views Radio Network on your app on your phone. So.
Absolutely. There's a perfect example. Yep. Make sure it's charged up so you can get her done. I think that, you know, going back to the point you made, Josh, it's all of the above. Mm-hmm. It really is. And if there's more that can come along and help, so what? Let it help. But any individual, and I tell this to them all the time, I think good, hard work when it comes to any type of climate change is a good thing, and it's an opportunity to create jobs. So it's a good thing. But I will tell you this, I'm a firm believer that I don't think people would like it one bit if we turned off any of the power that's coming from coal. I think they'd find out that they don't dislike coal that day.
Right. Yeah. Totally. I mean, I think it needs to be part of the mix. And you know, we have some of our members, Minn Kota Power, that are looking at carbon capture technology with Project Tundra. And I know that sometimes that can be a little controversial because it's a big investment. But the reality is, if we are talking about moving, you know, the utility industry to, you know, carbon neutral by you pick the date, the technology's got to be there. It's not yet. And I know a lot of people like to say, you know, we have batteries, we have all this. But for extended periods of time, we need to have baseload generation. It's either going to be coal or nuclear, and that's what the current technology is willing to
support. Is there any estimate in the little bit of time we have left, guys, that how many people in North Dakota, my state, how many people actually have jobs that relate to energy? I know that's coming out of left field for you guys, but, man, think of all those coal workers. Think of all those you know, gas line workers. There's a lot there. I mean, there really is.
And that might be a question for the next folks we got on, too, because they are, you know, train a lot of the energy workforce here in North Dakota.
Okay. BC. Well, I will ask them because it's, I mean, it matters. These are jobs, and we ship that power all over the place, you know. So, thank you. Josh, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Kelly, you stick around. You know, people are already digging the fact that they get to hear you again. So.